BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of BDNG Meets podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG. And today I have the great pleasure of introducing Modupe Sojai Adeyemo, all known to us as Bumi. She's already laughing at me. She has now been promoted to an AMP at Guy's and St Thomas's, and she's had over two decades of experience in dermatology, so it's my great pleasure to introduce her this evening. Today we're focusing on skin of colour, which I know Bumi's done a huge amount of work on and is really passionate about that topic as well. So welcome, Bumi.
Hello, Tina. Thank you very much. You are getting better at pronouncing my name, actually.
I'm trying.
So that's better than last time. So, yeah.
I'm trying.
It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
An absolute pleasure to have you. And our listeners will be really keen because we do feel that this topic, skin of colour, it's kind of hitting the highlight at the moment, isn't it? It's definitely coming more on everybody's radar. And I know where you work and where I work, actually, there is a lot of diversity and we see a lot of skin of colour. But there is areas in the country that don't see any skin of colour and there's no real training for it. Isn't that correct?
That's very correct.
So in Guy's and St Thomas's, when maybe you have a new nurse or somebody that's come to join you that hasn't got much experience in assessing skin of colour, have you got an education for them, or how do you do this, Bumi? How do you educate your junior members on skin of colour?
As you rightly said, there's no set education for patients, you know, to treat patients with skin of colour. So I guess what we do at Guy's and St Thomas's is we train as we go. So we educate ourselves as we go. And with the opportunity that I have to be one of the CNSs and now as advanced nurse practitioner, even though I'm not fully, you know, enveloped into that role yet, but it's been an opportunity and great one for me actually to be here and, you know, to be a voice and, you know, to raise an awareness for patients with skin of color. And I think starting indoor, we've had a lot of teaching sessions to educate ourselves on how to recognize the presentations of different type of skin diseases. In you know that we are the central, and we see lots of, from skin type 1 to skin type 6, we see lots of patients like that. So it's been an experience for us, and we are catching up, and I think we are doing better every day. So the best thing is to we teach ourselves as we go along.
I think we are improving. I think there's a long way to go, and even the experts on skin of colour, you know, would admit that we have got a long way to go. And education is so important in skin of colour. So you've mentioned there about presentations in the skin of colour. Is there differences, can you explain to our listeners the differences in presentation and skin of colour for certain skin conditions?
Yes, so they're completely different, and you have to have like an eagle eyes to recognize when you see the presentation. And you know, I was just looking at a picture the other day, and this is a patient that presented with psoriasis. But when you look at it, you know, the first glance, you think, oh, it's hyperpigmentation. And then on second look, and then I've now got more experience in recognizing this, but you know, I can kind of like, you know, pat myself on the shoulder, I said I've got that experience, but I mean, I'm still learning. But you know, given the year of experience, I was able to say, actually, that's not post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. This is a flare of psoriasis in a skin type 5, and the biopsy ended up confirming that. And you know, I would have been so worried if I got it wrong. So I think it's very difficult, but you know, as you grow into it, you know, with experience, so that means you need to know actually what you are looking for. You need to be able to feel, to see. And when I stand in front of you, Tina, as a patient, what do I see?
Yeah, it's really important.
Yeah, so it's very important to be able to say, I can see redness, I can see raised area, I can see area of scaling and things like that. So, and that will kind of help you to understand what you're actually looking for and not just assume. Yeah. So you have to look and look again.
Yeah, absolutely. And also ask the patient sometimes, you know, which is their normal skin tone, isn't it? It's really important to get that message across.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
When you are assessing a patient then, I mean, you mentioned there about hyperpigmentation, which we know obviously in skin of colour is very relevant. The difference between what made you think, oh, this is actually psoriasis and not hyperpigmentation, just for our listeners?
Okay, so the presentation asking the patient about when did this happen? Was there any lesion there before, now? And how do you feel, you know, with that area? It's very itchy and you can see the scaling presented. You can see some area that is really raised around the edges. And you can, and then I ask, do you have any lesion here before? She said, no. Okay. And then you feel it. It's a bit warm, which is kind of like probably, you know, area of inflammation. And then just kind of like closely look at it. And then it's not just isolated area. It's all widespread. When you have a look at their skin, there's no way you have post-inflammation all over your body. So looking at the presentation kind of like helped me understand that this is actually not post-inflammatory disease. This is actually a psoriasis. So taking history and checking with patient which area is your good area of skin. So you can kind of like check what the area of this good skin looks like compared to the area affected. And so good history taking, asking the right questions can help us to arrive at a right diagnosis for the patient as well.
Excellent, excellent. That's good tips there. And also when we're looking at skin of colour, could you just explain to our listeners the different, you mentioned redness, erythema there. What is the colours and the different presentation we're looking for in the scale? What are we looking for?
So it will be different from skin type 1 to skin type 6. So redness is already present where you can see it, obviously, is skin type 1. Whereas when you look at skin type 4 onward to skin 5 and 6, you will probably looking at a kind of like violaceous color, darker brown to what their skin brown color looks like. And someone might even just look like an ashen gray. And, you know, so you need to be kind of like understand what each of these things represent. And that's my passion, to kind of like raise awareness in terms of teaching session, educating my colleagues and everybody that I have to showcase what each of these looks like in each of type skin of color.
Yeah, and it's very difficult, isn't it, when there's very limited images out there as well. I know we're trying to create more images, and there's definitely, you know, that is on the cards to develop more. But I think, you know, to differentiate between maybe a mild psoriasis up to a severe, you know, mild, moderate, severe psoriasis, the images, they're just not there. So it really is based on experience, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, it takes me a longer time. And I think part of the opportunity that we have as a big, as a tertiary institute is that you've seen different patients in and out, diverse of patients with different skin type, and you can kind of like resonate with them as well. And sometimes when I teach my colleagues, sometimes I was like, okay, so you scratch a good area of your skin. And I think that's what I did with one of the students the other day. Scratch the area of your skin, and I scratch the area of my good skin as well. And then, but we both have redness. But in comparison, it's different because I have skin type, I would say I'm between 4 and 5. And she's skin type 3. So the redness was completely different. Mm. And she never thought of it that way. And that's how to look at patients standing in front of you. So your redness is completely different from somebody else's of my skin type 5 redness. So it depends on what you are actually looking for, asking the right questions. And I know we are, you know, skin of color are very underrepresented in textbook and things like that. So you can hardly see what you are looking for in textbooks. So it's like, I'm still going back to physically looking for what you need to see and what did you see when you look at it. If you need to feel, don't be shy to feel, and don't be shy to ask the patient the right questions.
It's really important to feel the skin, isn't it? And I think, yeah, I'm a big believer in that because, you know, like yourselves, we buddy up when we're doing PASI and easy scores when somebody's new with us. And I think, you know, I had somebody buddying up with me the other day and they hadn't felt the back of the neck, the skin on the back of the neck, and they didn't count that in the score. And it is that, you know, that was easily missed, I suppose, but it's learning, isn't it? It's learning to feel the skin, learning to ask the patient their skin tone, you know, getting confidence really in skin of color.
Yeah, it is,
and it's not always easy because, as I say, in some parts of the country the diversity is a lot less, and we're not taught it in medical school, we're not taught it in nursing school. So again, you know, hopefully in the future this will change, definitely. So we focused a wee bit there on PASI and the presentation, and a bit on hyperpigmentation there as well. Can we move on to eczema? I mean, which I think is more difficult. Would you agree with me?
Yeah. Very, very difficult. And but I love, is that the right word to say? I love eczema. It's quite difficult, Tina, with eczema. But I mean, with experience, though, you become much more easier. Because in terms of having the knowledge with the PASI, erythema will be erythema. So if you just transfer that knowledge of erythema in psoriasis, you just transfer that knowledge to eczema. And so it's for erythema, you'll be probably just know what you're looking for. The where it's become more difficult is the area affected.
Yes.
In skin of color. Yeah.
So how do you teach that? How do you, go on, give me your tips.
Put myself on the spot there.
You have indeed.
So, I mean, like I was sharing with, I don't know, was I share with you the other day about a patient with almost type 6 and a 19-year-old patient. This is my focus, where I find it, I couldn't tell which area is actually affected. And I don't want to say he's 100% affected. There must be somewhere. So there was no area of good skin. And I just kind of, I have to ask him, I say, is there any area that you think is your normal skin color?
Absolutely.
And he said, well, for him too, he's grew up to not even know what his skin type is anymore. And I felt so bad. But, you know, the other day he said, well, one day there's an area behind his ears and the ala of his nose.
Yeah, that's a good tip behind the ears, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where I went to look and I was like, oh my goodness. So it's actually a skin type 4, between 4 and 5, just like me. But standing in front of me is a type 6 patient.
You would have looked, I mean, I think that's a really important point to make to our listeners as well, isn't it? Because and that's why patients of skin of colour are underrepresented or, you know, misdiagnosed, because we naturally look at a patient and think that is their colour, skin of colour, which it may not. It may be a lower tone. Yeah. So it is really important to try and find that normal skin and work with the patient. They're really open to it, aren't they?
This patient was very upset because he's a 19-year-old young man in uni, and where GP has let him down on several occasions because GP couldn't see any reason why he kept coming back for steroid and emollient, because to him, there's nothing wrong with his skin.
Absolutely.
And you know, the more he tells the GP that this is not my skin, this is my eczema, the more GP does not understand. So it was really depressing for me. And I feel like if that's my child, I would be so much worried. So, it's more difficult with eczema patient compared to psoriasis, because psoriasis, you can see what you see, you treat. But for eczema, it becomes a different ball game. So, yeah.
It is more difficult.
It is.
Which resonates with me, and I know I've spoken to you about this before, but, you know, when a patient asked me, he was probably, I think, Fitzpatrick 5, border on maybe 6, actually, and he asked me, was I qualified to assess his skin of colour, which at the time I was a wee bit taken aback, but actually I thought, you are right. And it made me really think, you know. And he said he'd been so underrepresented before. He'd never had a proper diagnosis. His skin had never been assessed as severe, which it was. And we really talked through the process. And, you know, obviously the experience, and like yourself, you know, very passionate about skin of color assessment as well, and giving him that confidence. But I thought that's him taking so many different people to see before he got to somebody that thought actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm happy that you didn't take that personal, Tina, because I was reading, you know, now that I've been made the chair for subgroup, I have to kind of like read more into all these things and kind of like get myself more understanding so I can share the right thing with people. And I was reading a journal about an American journal the other day, and I realized that it takes each patient of skin of color more like 10 times journey to their general practitioner to for them to get diagnosed as to compare to skin type 1 and 2 in America. So I can imagine what is going on here. So if patients kind of ask that kind of question, I don't think anybody should be biased. Yeah. It's probably coming from a place of frustration where nobody has been able to understand. I mean, here, the other day, one of my patients called me and said, well, I called to talk to you because you can relate with my skin type. Mm-hmm. And you can see when patient tells you that, like saying, okay, I don't think my doctor understand what I'm going through.
Yeah.
And I said, what make you think that? I said, well, when anytime I go in, it just, you are getting better, but I'm not.
Yeah, and it's really interesting.
Yeah.
It really is. When that patient actually said that to me, I mean, I bring it up quite a lot and I discuss it with other people as well in teaching, because I think it is that relevance, isn't it, to what patients experience. And like you say, that evidence is coming through. It can take 10 people to see before they're diagnosed.
Yeah.
And like you say, if that was your child, you'd be devastated. I really would.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we've breached a wee bit there, talked a wee bit about, you know, eczema and psoriasis. I'm going to move on now to scalp and hair, because I know, again, you're very passionate about this. Hair presents very differently. There's different types of hair. And, you know, what I would maybe say to a patient might not work in skin of color because, you know, it's and again, very underrepresented in practice, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything you can advise our listeners today about scalp applications or different types of hair, or how do you approach these patients?
Right. Okay. So I just remember when one of my patients said to me the other day and said, well, I think you should open a hair shop in terms of topical application. What I know, see, when you know me, you probably know a little bit about me now. I'm quite a practical person. And when it comes to our skin type and our scalp, for me, outside of medicine, I know what I do with my scalp, and I know what I do with my children, and I know what I do with people around me that needs, I know what the advice I would give them. So when I see anyone with skin type of my, you know, my skin type and, you know, 5 and 6, I always ask them, like, topical from this angle, you don't need topicals. Depends on the presentation. If there's any inflammation, then fine. I will say, you need to go with topical steroid. You need to go with your emollient type of choice. But when you have very dry, scaly scalp, topical steroid won't do anything because there's no any inflammation. You just need to lift the scales. You just need to hydrate your scalp. So I go with the fact that you need a lot of hydration. So I always say to my patient, the amount of time that you feel thirsty, that you need to drink water, that's the amount of time you should remember to put something in your scalp. So we start from there, at least the first week or two, regularly, to descale your scalp. And I will go with a very thick emollient. And here on our treatment center, we love Hydromol or any kind of epidermal kind of or 50-50. And people, I find it amazing that people don't know that things like that can help just lift the scale of their scalp. And from first application, you can see that it's kind of like working. So we melt it a little bit and just pour it onto the scalp judiciously, massage into the scalp and wrap it in a clean film, or they can use any of their disposable shower cap and leave it on to work on their scalp and wash it off. If you want to use any kind of like tap preparation, like, you know, cocos ointments to help with the salicylic to break down the scale, go for it. But unless the scalp is actually inflamed, I don't see any reason why we need to use topical steroid.
It's a good point about the descaling, isn't it? Because it's so important, you know, and to take that time just to explain, like you say, about the shower cap or leaving it on the cling film. I think, you know, if we don't do these things, then we're really, it's counterproductive, isn't it?
And which is the opposite for skin type one. They were just like, oh, I don't want my skin, my hair will be greasy. And greasy. Well. But we live on greasy stuff. We kind of swim in it. So, and when patients wash that off with prescribed shampoo, I say to my patients, get any kind of oil apart from olive oil. There's a research that shows that olive oil doesn't kind of help with hydration. So apart from anything that does not freeze in room temperature, get them like any kind of avocado oil, any kind of maybe your coconut oil, anything that you feel that you can use, mix them up with amount of water equal amount of oil, shake and spray on your scalp every morning before you leave the house. I'll do that on my scalp every day because my skin type is different from 1 and 2 patients. So from skin type 4, 5, and 6, we have different hair texture. So you need different treatment for your scalp. You need to hydrate all the time. You can see I've cut my hair short now, and because I want to, that's one thing about me. Before I sell an idea to you, I will have tried several times on myself.
That's excellent, absolutely excellent, Bumi, because that's really good points what you're saying about, you know the difference between Fitzpatrick 1 and 5 and 6 and mm-hmm. the different, and you hear this all the time, don't you, when you're in clinic, and it's not one treatment fits all, it's that individual treatment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not. And we see them a lot, and so different teaching session for different Fitzpatrick skin types, so yeah.
And when you're educating your patients, are they seen in your day clinic or are they seen within your actual consultation times?
Yeah, so I physically run 2 clinics a week on my day for our treatment center. So for you, before you start the treatment, you need to have a consultation with the CNSs or AMP, whoever is doing the list. And during that consultation is when this come up. So we educate. And at the end of education, then some of them will say, I actually don't need to come here. I'll go home and do it. So they have that option to go home. They get help to do that on their scalp. Someone can help them. And I'll see them back in 2 weeks or 4 weeks. Depends on how they need it. And, you know, I remember this patient last year that had she had a dreadlock on, and mm-hmm. she's got very thick scale. She didn't want to remove the dreadlock because obviously she would have to cut her hair because of the hairstyle. So, and I gave her this plan, and she's the one that mentioned I need to open a hair shop because within 2 weeks, all the scale kind of like completely gone. And she did the hair spray and the water spray, and she's kind of increased her hydration. She looks, her scalp's got back to normal.
That's really impressive. And I think, you know, I think maybe not open a hair shop, but maybe do some videos, definitely.
I'm up for it.
Well, the great news is to our listeners that Bumi is now going to be our subgroup leader for Skin of Colour. So hopefully we'll get some more education out there for Skin of Colour on the BDNG. And I know last year, or this year, was it? We actually did a Skin of Colour Day, and the talks were absolutely fantastic. We had some really good presentations on that day. Unfortunately, we were hit by the train strikes. But, you know, there is some really passionate people, I would say, out there on Skin of Colour who've got so much knowledge and so much to share, which is all positive. It's all education. I know we're not perfect yet, but it's definitely we're definitely getting more and more. I mentioned earlier about the lack of images on, you know, I mean, I think Dermnet is we're getting a few more images there. Do you find, I mean, are you still struggling to get images, or do you find that, I mean, you do most of your teaching hands-on, or, you know, how does your education work with people that are new into Guy's and St. Tommy's?
You know, I'm quite a practical person. So the images doesn't work for me, to be honest, because you search and search and you cannot even find the one that suits what you want to do. So I do lots of hands-on. And if we are having a teaching session, if I see a patient that's kind of like trigger me to explain things to my colleague, I speak to my patient first. I say, well, actually, if you don't mind, I need to get this or so people to come in and have a look and just have a few sessions. And most of the patients are always open for it. And we are very privileged that because we have a treatment center here, it's much easier for us to do a quick teaching sessions. So that's in that area, we have that advantage that we can, it's an ongoing session for us. We don't even have to arrange for a teaching session. We could come in the morning and say, oh, so come is coming with this diagnosis. And, you know, from the name or when you do previous picture, you can tell skin type they are. So actually, when the patient comes, call me. And we get ourselves together and do the quick 5 or 10 minutes teaching session. And it's an ongoing thing that we do on the day center here, which kind of help us to understand how to treat our patient better. Yeah,
I think it really works, isn't it? And we call each other in when we think it's a good case. And, you know, I think that's how people learn. It's the practicality of it, isn't it? And doing that hands on. And I know we'll get better. I know we will, especially you, Bibi, especially with the drive you have. So we've mentioned eczema, we've mentioned psoriasis, we've mentioned scalp. I'm just going to quickly just mention about hyperpigmentation and hypopigmentation that you briefly talked about earlier. You have a really good way of explaining this to your patients, which I want you to explain to our listeners, just about how you would advise patients on hyperpigmentation.
So it depends on the diagnosis. So for acne patients, I know we don't talk much about acne, but for someone that have suffered with acne in the past, I know how depressing it is to have the pigmentation from your acne scar. And it's more, even more depressing than the acne itself. And I know how long it took me to get rid of my scar or the pigmentation on my face. And you cannot see anything now, but it's been a very hard journey. And during my research into what to do and listening to different kind of teaching, it's just keeping things simple. Keep it basic. Don't overdo things in terms of if it's acne, just a good wash, a good moisturizer, and a sun protection, whether it's sunny or it's not. Make sure you have your sun protection on. And what I always say to my patients is just see it as a scar. Because when you have a scar, it doesn't go overnight. It takes longer for the scar to even disappear. So, and that's when you see your pigmentation, whether it's hyper or hypo, as a scar, then you kind of like keep your mind at rest that this will disappear. It will just take time. Now, if it's psoriasis or it's eczema, that's another different ballgame because it's affecting the wider body surface area. And the same thing, unless you need like steroid, if not, a good moisturizer is good for you. A good one. And don't shy away from applying as many times as possible and keeping it simple, maybe like moderate steroid if needs be. If not, keep it simple. Good wash, good moisturizer. Sun cream, if you need to go out in the sun, just because you have eczema or psoriasis doesn't mean you cannot use your sun cream. It's very, very important. And that's the only way to go about it. Then now people do other evasive or whatever treatments. I'm not a good advisor on that, but I always ask my patient to keep it simple.
Yeah, simple and persevere, isn't it?
It's that perseverance. That's right. Yeah.
Absolutely. And a really important point that you brought up there about sun cream, because the amount of patients of Fitzpatrick 5, 6, even possibly lower than that, say, I don't need it, I don't burn.
Every time. One of my patients the other day, and she said, oh, I go to, she mentioned where she's from the Caribbean, and I sit in the sun and I didn't have this kind of eczema. And I said, yes. Then I asked him, were you born with eczema? No. When did you start having eczema? When I came to this country. There you go then. And now you live in this country. That's the more reason why you should wear your sun cream.
Absolutely. And it's really important. We now do sun awareness in our consultations. We're very fortunate we do have the samples there. And, you know, I always find with people with skin of colour, you know, I always usually have that reluctant kind of, no, I don't need it. I don't need it, which is, it's really important, I think, for us to try and get that message across, isn't it? Yeah. That you do need, absolutely.
Of course. And I like to use myself all the time because I was in that school of thought as well. Like, why do I need sun cream? why do I need and this? Until I went home for my dad's burial and I came back with multiple skin color.
I have seen the evidence of that. Yes,
I know. So yeah, and that's despite the fact that I went home with sun cream.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. And I'm telling you the truth now. I went to Nigeria with SPF 50 for my face and my body, and I still got burned.
Yeah,
and that's how intensive it can be. So from that, I kind of use that to explain to people that when you go away into area where there's, you know, intensified nature of the kind of sun exposure, look at your knuckles, look at your eyebrow, look at those areas that's exposed to the sun and compare to your normal skin color.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's more reason why you need to understand that going outside of here, you need to protect yourself. Even going outside anywhere, you must protect yourself. People have CAD, chronic acne dermatitis, from so if patient can have that, you need to be aware, you know. And some people, they go out and say, the sun is so, it's so hot, I'm getting this. And yeah, that's to raise an awareness to understand that it is very, very important to wear your sun cream.
Yeah, 100%. And, yeah. You know, we do, again, this is, should be part of our, you know, it is becoming part of our workload, really, you know, to educate patients on this.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, we've definitely improved in our trust, you know, trying to educate our patients on that. Definitely.
Definitely. Should work on that here too.
Yeah, chipping away just adds all to the challenges of that 20 minute, 30 minute appointment, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So that's some really good information. I know we could speak a lot longer on this topic, but the great news is to our listeners that you are becoming the subgroup leader of the BDNG Skin of Colour, and we are going to be working a lot more with Bumi as well to produce some more work for the website. And also we have planned after main conference as well to do further webinars, so we will get more education out there. We know it's not perfect, we know it's not, you know, we've got a long way to go, but we are trying, and we are working quite closely as well with Skin of Colour Training in UK, who again have put a lot of work into their education.
Yeah.
And it is all about sometimes buddying up with somebody who's got more experience, going to an area that's got more diverse, so you can get that experience as well, and also just reaching out to people that have got the experience as well, isn't it?
Definitely.
You've made some really good points there. Is there any key messages you would like to say to our listeners tonight before you leave, Bumi?
I think my key message as a professional and as a, as you know, in this, in dermatology, is to always ask the right question. Always ask the right questions, be it that you are just developing your role of assessment, assessing patient skin or consultation skills and things. And, you know, don't be too shy from asking people that have been in that role questions. And this is something that I kind of like do all the time. And I always say to myself, me asking question doesn't mean I'm stupid, doesn't mean I don't know, it's because I actually want to know. And it makes you more a wise person when you ask questions, because whatever you ask and you get an answer for sticks with you. So, you know, and, you know, ask questions to show you how to do this, to tell you what to do, or to demonstrate how to do things. And, you know, ask until you understand it. The more you practice, the more you ask, the more you get the answer, the more you get used to it. And, you know, don't limit yourself to what you see, read up about it, and, you know, look at what people have been doing in terms of how they're doing. Pair up with other colleagues that want to do your do passes score easy. And, you know, if you feel like you're not competent enough, it doesn't make you a lesser person than you are. It's just because you want to be competent. So pair up and ask questions. I think that's the way to go.
Just being honest.
Yeah, I've been under good tutelage here, and it's a very good privilege for me to be here. And, you know, feel free to contact us if you need any help. We can arrange that. We do allow people to come visit our treatment center to see how we do and how we get on with our patients. So it's a good one if you want to come around.
It's always good experience to do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I know many years ago I worked with them, Lucy and Guys as well. It's a good experience to have.
Yeah. I left so you can come in, Tina.
Might not be allowed now. So I'd like to say a massive thank you, Bhumi. Fantastic tips there for our listeners this evening. And as I know there will be more work out there for the BDNG as well. So thank you for your support. Always a pleasure to work with you. And I know how driven and how hardworking you are behind the scenes as well. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's been a privilege. Thank you for your support too, Tina. And Skin of Color is at the BDNG. So if you want to pop in as well, yeah, looking forward to that.
Absolutely. There'll be a whole session on it this time. So
that's right.
So, yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much, Bhumi.
Thank you for the opportunity, Tina. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.